Hi, Pleasure Miss Amaya. You probably figured out that Pesach is coming up soon. For those of us in my line of work, this is like the scariest time of year. But my niece, Tequila Berger, and her friend, Ilana Rabinovich, asked if I could come and deliver a shiur here before Pesach. And I kind of was excited about the idea. So I'm here, and I hope that you'll enjoy as much as I enjoy. I always enjoy giving shiurim. Whether or not you enjoy shiurim is the question. There's a famous line by Adlai Stevenson, which is that I'm here to speak, you're here to listen. Needless to say, you'll be done long before I'm done. Okay, what I'd like to discuss with you tonight is the question of kitnios on Pesach. Kitnios on Pesach is a topic that is getting a tremendous amount of press now. In Eretz Yisrael, it is becoming harder and harder outside of a limited number of communities where you have large numbers of Haredim. It's becoming harder and harder to get non-kitnios food. Now, this is for a number of reasons. This is because the Sephardi population in Israel is larger than the Ashkenazi population. And this is because in recent years, there has been a development that many are arguing vociferously against the practice of kitnios. Many are saying that this practice of not eating kitnios on Pesach is an evil practice, it's a practice that we should get rid of, it's a practice that makes us hungry. Few things are worse in life than being hungry. And therefore, people have been arguing to get rid of the practice of kitnios. Just to spill the beans, pardon the expression, before we get into it, I am going to argue that we should maintain the practice of not eating kitnios on Pesach. I think the practice of not eating kitnios on Pesach has a very large, very long history, and therefore it should be maintained as much as possible. But let's get into it. Let's learn the sugya, and hopefully you'll make comments as we go along, because I don't want this to be a monologue. I really would like if people can insert your thing. So, are kitnios chametz? No. Good. That's correct. Although, there are some who have traditions that you should not own kitnios on Pesach. Many people come to sell chametz. They say, Rabbi, do I have to sell my rice? The answer is no. Rice is not chametz. Rice is kitnios, you don't have to sell it. My grandmother, Lava Shalom, actually used to try to get us to get rid of all the rice. You don't remember this, you're too young. To get rid of all the rice that we had in the house before Pesach. Technically speaking, it's not necessary, but it's also very hard to argue with your grandmother. So we'll say it like that. Now, how do I know that kitnios is not chametz? Because I have a Mishnah here in Pesachim Lamed Hei, the first source. The Mishnah tells me, Eilu Tarm Shadam Yotzei Bohen, Yidei Chavasu B'Pesach, Chitim Sa'orim Kusman Shikon Shibolas Shu'al. That the following grains, you can yotzei your mitzvah of matzah on Pesach. And of these grains, there are five listed. This is a whole other shiur. Two of these grains we know what they are. Chitim and Sa'orim are wheat and barley. But we know what those are. The others, kusmin, shipon, and shibulas shoal, are much more difficult to properly identify. It's traditionally translated as spelt, oats, and rye. Years ago, there was a very big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yehuda Felix, who actually is any of you from Toronto? Well, Felix was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Ar HaChaim and the Olpana in Toronto. He published a few volumes called Hatzomeyah BaMishnah, basically all the plants, etc. in the Mishnah. And then he published a book for kids that he went through all of the plants identified in the Mishnah, and he pointed out what they look like, etc., so that you know what they are. And when he came to the Mishnah of these five grains, so he writes that oats is a mistake in identity. And if you identify, he has a picture of oats, and there's like a big X through it. He says it's like a mistake. Oats is not one of the Chameshes Minei Dagon. And any of you who study biology, you know they have these two Latin names for all these things. One is the genus, one is the phylum or something. Based on this anymore. It's been a long time since ninth grade. But the fact is, these the two names, Oats, is totally unrelated to the names of the wheat and barley. Totally unrelated. The Yerushalmi, the Bavli, both say that the other three species have to be subsets of wheat and barley. Oats is probably unconnected. So Felix maintains that the identity of Oats as one of the five species is just a mistake. And he published this in Mishnayos. His bad luck is that someone brought this picture of Mishnayos to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman looked at it, it says it's a mistake, and Rav Shlomo Zalman got all upset. He says, no, you can't say that something that's traditionally been understood by Jews, that Oats is one of the Chamishis Minei Dagon, is a mistake, and therefore they had all these signs hanging around Yerushalayim that Rav Felix is himself making a mistake. And then the issue, if you take out like the Art Scroll book on Hokos Brachos by Rabbi Forst, so he writes that there are some people who contend that Oats is not one of the Chamishis Minei Dagon. He has a very strong expression, says this is completely contradictory to our Masora, it's totally wrong, etc. So there is a huge literature about Oats. According to Rav Felix, that Oats is not one of the Chamishis Minei Dagon, so people who are gluten intolerant, or people who have celiac disease, cannot be yotze the mitzvah of matzah by eating oat matzahs, no? Gluten might be the definition of chametz. Again, what exactly it takes to become chametz, what fermentation means, is a whole other topic, but it's hard to argue that oats is actually a subspecies of wheat or barley. That is hard to argue, botanically speaking. Nonetheless, we have traditions that oats have been identified as one of the Chamishis Minei Dagon, and as such, many people do eat oat matzah on Pesach. If there's any gluten in oats, it's because there's always gluten around in the air. Pure oats should not have any gluten on it. So that's one issue. If a person is gluten intolerant, so you should really consult with a rav about what to do to fulfill the mitzvah of a Chilas Matzah. It's not the easiest question. But so the Mishnah says there are only five things that you can use to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. And the Gemara says, these five things you get in the mitzvah of matzah, hani in, orez and dochen lo. These five things, yes, and orez and dochen, no. Orez and dochen. Anyone want to translate these? What's orez?
Rice.
Rice, right? That's easy. So you think like Tysus. Rashi in Perakei Tzemavarachim assumes that orez is millet, not rice. The Magen Avraham Paskin said if you eat rice, you should make a shahakol. Any Lubavitchers among us? No, okay. The Alter Rebbe in his Siddur says that you make a shahakol on rice. I happen to make a shahakol when I eat rice, or I gush with the Alter Rebbe writes in Shulchan Aruch, he said you shouldn't eat rice if you have Yerushalayim, which means you should only eat rice if you make a mizonos and a ha'adam on some other food beforehand. That the practice among many Hasidim. The Mishnah Berurah Paskins that writes is definitely Orez, because the Vilna Gaon apparently did some test where the Mishnayos and Bava Metzias speak about the pichos. If I have like a pound of rice and I leave it with you, a pound of wheat, I leave it with you for a year, how much will go down naturally, that if I return less than a pound, we assume that I haven't been neglectful of my shmira. What time is this class over?
It's the over 9 o'clock.
I sit up, I have something going on here at
8 o'clock. Traditionally, orez is understood to be rice, and the Gemara says that you can only be yotze matzah with the five minei dogon, not with orez and dochen, not with rice and millet, or not with, according to Rashi, two different types of millet. You may ask, well, not honey mealy, how do you know that? Some Reish Lach, Yishuchin Tana V'Rev Yishma, V'Chin Tana V'Rev Lezer Ben Yaakov, Amak Rav, Lo Tochal Alof Chameitz, Shiv As Yamin Tochal Alof Matzos, Devarim habayim yidei chimus, adam yosi bahen yidei chavaso b'matza. Yasu elu she'ein bahen yidei chimus, elu yidei sirachot. You can only fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, the Gemara says, with those items that can be button yidei chimus. Only things that could potentially become chametz can you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with. Something that cannot become chametz, you can't possibly fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with. Some Rishonim took this position in a very extreme sort of way, and some Rishonim in the Beis Midrash of Rashi, for example, felt that you're not yotzei the mitzvah of matzah unless you bake your matzah at a time that you're not allowed to eat chametz. Which is like Erev Pesach after Chatzot. By Hasidim, they have like the matzah's mitzvah that they bake Erev Pesach after Chatzot. It's dangerous. It's a very dangerous practice, but it's done. The fact is, however, we assume that you cannot be yotzei the mitzvah of matzah with items that can't possibly come lidei chimutz. And the examples of something that can't come lidei chimutz are orez and dochen, which is usually translated to be rice. That means rice cannot be chametz, correct? Given. Rice cannot be chametz. Not only is it clear from this Gemara that rice can't be chametz, the next Gemara, Sachem Kuf Yudalev, the Mishnah says that we have something called a Seder plate. You know? It's not only an unfolded plate, she's sewing, it actually exists in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says that you should have Shnei Tavshilin on your Seder plate. You should have two cooked dishes. What are these two cooked dishes? Amarav Huna, Silka V'Aroza. Silka are beets, and Aroza is rice. So that means that, presumably, that means that they had rice on their Seder plate. That means that rice is not chametz. And some Amoraim, Bedavka, put rice on the Seder plate because the Rebbe said rice. And this goes against, the Gemara continues, the position of Yochanan ben Nuri. The Tanya of Yochanan ben Nuri felt that rice is one of the grains, and you can fulfill your mitzvah of matzah on Pesach with rice matzah, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is rejected. So la halacha, rice cannot come with dei chimutz, therefore you cannot make matzah out of rice. Yes?
Is it possible that for one to paskin like Rashi, though, and to say that rice, that or it's not necessarily
again,
rice?
If I don't paskin like Tosis, if I paskin like Rashi, so Oriz does not mean rice, but rice is still something that doesn't come with dei chimutz. Whatever chimutz means, if you want, there's a nice article in the journal, Tchumen number 1, the difference between wheat and barley, which comes with dei chimutz, and other things, is the amount of beta amylase that takes to break it down over X number of time. The science majors over here probably understand this. I have no idea what it means. Now, the fact is that rice does not come with dei chimutz. The Gemara says that rice comes with a sirachon. Sirachon means, technically, it smells bad. A few years ago in yeshiva, I think like 12 years ago, we learned sukkah in yeshiva. And when we learned sukkah, so I did a test with my shir. I had guys go and buy wheat flour, barley flour, oat flour, and rice flour, and mix it together and leave it on the radiator in the room and see whether it comes, what changes. And it happens that after around 3 weeks, the rice started smelling really bad. I assume that that's what seirachon means. I do not recommend that you try this in your own dorm room, because it actually smells bad. Now, they do look the same. The Gemara has other simanim of chametz, that like it begins to crack, and it's chichsav paneha, and the top of it is white. Rice looks very similar in that respect, but it does smell bad. I assume that's what seirachon means. I really have no idea. Yeah?
Why were beets and rice on the Seder plate?
So the Gemara says that there are two tavshilin that's on the Seder plate. Traditionally, that's thought to be zecher pesach, zecher chagiga. Why they use beets and rice, it's probably because they like the way that it tasted. It probably doesn't. Today, we use zroa and a beitza for Kabbalistic reasons, basically. That's why we use our own beitza. It happens that there were other Rishonim who say that the two Tavshilas can get Moshe and Aharon. There actually is one school of Rishonim that would have three Tavshilas on the Seder plate, the Seder of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, which means that like there are very early sources for an orange on the Seder plate. or whatever that's supposed to mean, but that exists in the Sefer Maaser Rotayach. Okay, Zozayin, whatever it is, the Mishnah says Shnei Tavshil, and why they chose it, different people chose different things that they liked. So Gavar Rosa. Now the Rambam Paskins in Perikei of Chometz Maaser Halacha Aleph, that's this first source, that only Chamesh Yasmine Dagon is usher on Pesach. They, the Chamesh Yasmine Dagon, look at the way the Rambam formulates it. Kem Shnei Mine Chitim Shein Chita V'Kuseres, these are the two types of wheat, and the three types of barley, which is Sa'or, Shibol, Shual, and Shipon. Kitnios, like Uris, Dochen, Pulim, Adoshim. Pulim are beans, Adoshim are lentils. If Kiyotze Ben, there's no Chametz, I afilu lush kemach orez ukiyotze boger rosten v'kisok of godim ha'chanisbach v'shmo v'atzeik shehech mitzareiz ha'mutim v'achilo she'ein z'achim v'tzalo se'rachon. Zuck the Rambam, even if it rises, it still is not chametz, end of conversation. So, it's obvious that rice, kitnios, is not chametz. There is nothing to talk about. Now, when I should say that there's nothing to talk about, I mean, midina de gemara. There was one school of Rishonim in Provence who felt that although Orez is not Chametz, that means that Orez is not Chametz min HaTorah, but min Rabbanon Orez is Chametz. There is a type of Chametz called Chametz Nuksha. Chametz Nuksha basically means two things. One definition of Chametz Nuksha is what the Gemara calls Se'or. Se'or should not be confused with Se'ar. Se'ar is starter dough. Se'ar is an issur d'oraisa. That's like, there's a verse in scripture or something, don't do se'ar on Pesach. Se'or means that the process of chametz began and the process was arrested, the process stopped in the middle. That's se'or. That's one type of chametz nuksha. Another type of chametz nuksha is chametz that was never ro'i la'achila. It was always not edible. Usually, if I have chametz that was ro'i la'achila at one point, so in order for it to become mutter, it has to now be something that's not ro'i la'achilas kelev, something that a dog cannot eat. However, if something was never edible, so then that's considered chametz only midrabbanan. Min HaTorah, that's not chametz, that's called chametz nuksha. There was a school of Rishonim in Provence. Provence, by the way, is the south of France. It's called the French Riviera. If anyone ever invites you there, it's a nice place to be. Now, those Rishonim in Provence felt that Orez and Kitnios, commonly day Chametz Nuksha, that they are Aser Midrabbanon based on Chametz. If you look in the Sefer Menucha is authored by Rabbeinu Manoach. Sefer Menucha is a 13th century work. It's printed in the Franco Rambam on Sefer Ahava and Zmanim. The Sefer Menucha quotes from the Sefer Minhagos. The Sefer Minhagos is a 12th century work. It's like 100 years earlier. That the Sefer Minhagos says, Nagu kol ha'olam shol lechol zer'onim b'pesach mipnei shehin nachmitzin. Okay, nekra'in chimtzi. That the world, the Welt, does not eat zer'onim on Pesach because they are chametz. Now, obviously, it can't mean that they're actually chametz. What he means is that they are chametz nuksha. It's some sort of chametz midrabbanan. The greatest Rishon in Provence ever was a Jew named the Ravid, no? The Ravid is Rav Avram ben David of Pastiers. He basically was the main opponent of the Rambam, but the Me'iri always refers to the Ravid as Gedolei HaMafarshim. He wrote a commentary on all of Shas based on the Shitos of Provence. The Ravid, according to the Ravid, has a line here. We have this Ravid printed in Perikei of Chametz Maaser Halacha Beis. Right? Halacha Beis of the Rambam is talking about the halacha that Mei Peros is not Machmetz. Mei Peros means egg matzahs, or people call it egg matzahs, it's really apple juice matzahs, no? Or grape juice matzahs. Grape juice matzahs, by the way, are awesome. They really taste very good. The thing is that grape juice matzahs, you can't be yotzei matzah with it, because it can't come lidei chimtz. There is a discussion in Rishonim. Some Rishonim assume that matzah ashira is usher based on chametz nuksha also. It's also this type of derabbanon chametz, and that's standard Ashkenazi practice. The Rabbon Shulchan Aruch says you should only eat your grape juice matzahs or your apple juice matzahs if you're ill or you're elderly or something like that. Yes.
So can you just re-explain what the concept of chametz
nuksha is rabbinic chametz. It began to ferment and didn't get all the way there. That's the easier of the two explanations. There are Mishonim who feel that, or let's go like this. The Rambam talks about Meperos in Halakha Beis. And the Rambam says that Meperos doesn't have chimutz. The Ravid, right, if you look at the two lines on the bottom of this Rambam, Perkei Halakha Beis, the Ravid quotes Amar Avram, the end of the line, Ein Dabrzat Pashot, V'lo Hakom Odenbo, Denihi V'ein Osum Chametz Gomor, V'ein Chayim Alchimutzo Kareis, Avon Nuksha Mi'ahava. In other words, you're not Chayim Kareis, but it is Chametz Nuksha. Meaning the Ravid is saying that something is Chametz Nuksha. The way we have this Ravid, the Ravid is in Halacha Beis, and the Ravid is saying that Mei Peros is Chametz Nuksha, which is our standard Ashkenazi practice that only sick people eat egg matzahs. Right? However, the first printing of the Rambam in 1574 had this Ravid not on Halacha Beis, but had this Ravid on Halacha Aleph. Halacha Aleph is talking about the five grains as opposed to kidneys. And if the Ravid is going on Halacha Aleph, that means that the Ravid was saying that kitnios is chametz nuksha. Kitnios is rabbinic chametz. There was a school of Rishonim. The Ritva quotes this from Chachmei Tzarfas, but the Ritva probably wasn't sensitive to the difference between Tzarfas and Provence. Right? Tzarfas is the north of France, like Paris. Provence is the Riviera. The Ritva quotes a school of Rishonim who felt that Orez and Kitnios is Chametz Nuksha. And what we see from the Sefer Menucha of Rabbeinu Manoach, that he's coming from the Sefer Minhagos, that there are some who don't eat Zerbonim on Pesach because it is Chametz Derabbanan. And that was a practice in Provence. Now, here's the thing. Jews in Provence felt that kitnios is aser midrabbanan, and it's really some sort of chametz derabbanan. And you know what happens when you think that? You begin to say, whoa, 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 one second. We assume it's aser midrabbanan, but the Gemara says they have it on the Seder plate. How would they have it on the Seder plate if it's aser midrabbanan? Well, obviously, we're wrong. And obviously, kitnios is not aser at all. So, there's a great article in the journal Ar Yisrael. Ar Yisrael is like a Torah journal that comes out in Muncie. It's a group of like lapsed Lubavitchers, which is like an interesting chevron. We have Gedalia Oberlander is the editor of the Ar Yisrael journal. But this journal contends that if you look at the later generations in Provence, by the time you get to the Me'iri died in 1306, no? That means he's like 14th century. And by the time you get to times a little bit after the Me'iri, people are saying that there are some who are machmir on kitnios, but don't do it. The minhag in Provence died. In Provence, Jews did not forbid kitnios. Because originally they forbade kitnios. Later on, they realized, right? And originally they forbade kitnios because they felt it's chametz nuksha, it's aser midrabbanan. Later on, they say, oh my gosh, it has to be aser midrabbanan, it's against the Gemara. So therefore, you know what, kitnios is really heter gomer. Precisely because they zooped it up, that's why they end up knocking it down later on. That was the practice in Provence. What we're trying to do, by the way, is show that different cultures have different practices. People think about Ashkenazic Jewry like we are all the same, no? Just like Ashkenazim think about Sfarim, they're all the same. Well, there are differences between Moroccans and Syrians. And there are differences between Jews from Algeria, and, right? There are differences. And you know what? And there are differences between Jews from Germany, and there are differences between those Jews and Jews in the north of France, and Jews in the south of France, etc. There are real differences. So if we trace them in Huggin, going back, in the south of France, they originally felt it's really chametz min drabanan, but later on, they said not usher at all. What about the north of France? What did they say in the north of France regarding kitnios? So the greatest going in the north of France was Rabbi Yechiel of Paris. Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, actually if you look in the smack is reflecting German practice, but he talks about Mori Rabin Yechiel. You see it's like the second line, almost the third line in the same Mitzvah's Pachim. Mori Rabin Yechiel, Hayanoi Lecho Betesa, Kul Halovan Shekorin Favaish. Favaish is probably fava beans. Fava beans are assumed to be kitneos. But Rabbeinu Yechiel ate them on Pesach. Right? It's at the top of page 2. It says Germany and reasons for the practice. Rabbeinu Yechiel ate them. And the minhag in Sarfas, in the north of France, is that Jews ate kitneos and no one batted an eyelash. Nowhere in Rashi do you see a prohibition to eat kitneos, ever. We have hundreds, literally hundreds of Sfarim from the Talmidim of Rashi. Nowhere in any of the students of Rashi do you see any minhag not to eat kitneos. The minhag did not exist in the north of France. It exists in the south of France, really zooped up, therefore they got rid of it later on. In the north of France, it did not exist. So where does our practice of not eating kitneos come from? The answer is, it comes from Germany. Right, France and Germany, by the way, are two different countries. Okay, I hope like people stop it. I know my students in yeshiva, Smita guys, laptop, they didn't know that France and Germany are different. But you should realize France and Germany are two different countries. Now, the Beis Yosef in his presentation of the Isra of Kitneos, if you just look at the top, the underlined line in the section that begins Sfarad, it continues on page 2. The Beis Yosef writes, "Less lechosh lachon milsa zulasi Ashkenazim." The Beis Yosef says only the Ashkenazim are worried about kitneos. Sfaradim not worried about kitneos. End of conversation. And in Sfaradim, there was a practice. And when he says Ashkenazim, I'm not 100% sure if the Beis Yosef was sensitive to different cultures. Well, we speak about Ashkenaz writ large, but Ashkenaz could also be in the narrow sense of Germany. I'm not sure if the Beis Yosef was aware of this distinction. But the fact is, in Sfarad, no such practice. The practice, however, was very popular in Germany. And in Germany, the smack really made the practice famous. Now, just a word about the smack. The smack died in the year 1280. His name was Rabbi Yitzchak of Korville. The smack was the single... For us today, what's the most published Jewish book? Arts Girl, maybe. Even better. The Bencher. No? The Bencher. How many Tanakhs do you have at home, and how many Benchers do you have at home? It's given. Right? The Bencher, so that means that American Jewish culture likes to eat. That's all we can conclude from this. The single most published book in the medieval period was the smack. The smack was like the kitzur shulchan aruch for the medieval Jew. Ad hayom hazeh, you buy a smack, it's divided up into 7 days, because there are 7 days of the week, and you're supposed to learn this sefer once a week. It's not that long, it's like 60, 70 pages, and you're supposed to chazer all of the mitzvahs in the Torah once a week, so that you're constantly reviewing. That's the smack. The smack is the most important book in terms of knowing what Jews did. Now, what happened with the smack is that there were various Rishonim who learned smack and added their hagols on the smack, and eventually those hagols, those comments, ended up becoming incorporated into the smack itself, and that's what happens over here. So everyone is quoting this from the smack, but we know from the manuscripts these are actually notes of Rabbeinu Peretz on the smack. But for our purposes, it doesn't really matter. Because for our purposes, what matters is that Jews in Germany are taking the minhag of kitneos really seriously. Now, German Jews take Minhagim very seriously at Hayom HaZeh. A rabbi in Washington Heights, there's another show in Washington Heights called Droyers. They take Minhagim really, really seriously. This is standard practice of German Jews. Now, the Smak, when he talks about Kitnios, first he quotes that Rabbeinu Yechiel ate these fava beans on Pesach, and he says, it's very difficult. Mihu kasha hadavar ma'od, lahatir davar, shenohagin boha olam iser, mimei chachomim hakadmonim. That is probably the most important line in the Smak. He says it's very difficult to be matter something that people have been noheg iser on. Now, if you ever read anything by Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's son, I was fortunate to take him when I was in Revel. So Dr. Soloveitchik has many articles trying to show that Minhagim in Germany are extremely important, even when the Minhagim seem to be indefensible. There's a Minhag of German Jews that during the Crusades they would actually kill their children. This is indefensible, halachically. You're not allowed to kill somebody else. It's Yahari Vayavar. It's really, really bad. But German Jews take Minhagim really seriously. And if people do it, they have expressions that Einam Nevi'im, B'nei Nevi'im. They have expressions like, we have to maintain the practice. And a similar thing is going on over here in the Smak. The Smak is saying that my Rebbe was mekel to eat kitnios on Pesach, but it's so difficult to be mekel on something that everyone has a minhag not to do. No? That's what he says. Kasha adar ma'od lahat adar shanoyim boha olam isa mimei chacham ha'kalmonim. V'lachin nireh, they just skip a little bit, and presumably the issa is not because of chimutz. Right, that's what he writes in the lines I didn't underline, because everybody knows, even Tinokos Shabbos Rabba know, that it's not chametz. Therefore, in order to be mekayim this minhag, we have to say that there's a gezeira. Elo mitam gezeira. Kem the kitnis masa kedeira. Hu v'dogan nami masa kedeira kedaisa. You have a sharmina kitnis, ulai also a chufi lahat kedaisa. Kitnis looks a little bit like oatmeal. You could cook it in a pot. It looks like a cereal, it looks like a porridge, it looks like oatmeal. People might come to eat oatmeal on, people might come to eat porridge on Pesach if we permit kitnios. And he says, also, it's stuff that is piled up in silos. So it's like the dugan. And basically, he has another reason. If you go on, the Ugur has a reason in the top of page 3 that kitnios is usher because grains get mixed into it. No? Shemine chitin misarvin bahen balon. Right? Mine chitin misarvin bahen means that there's a practice called crop rotation. Crop rotation is that if you want your field to have energy, to produce well, you can't keep on growing the same thing year after year after year. Just like if you take a class, and you take the same class again and again and again, and eventually it gets bored. So it gets boring. You don't have the energy to do it. Crop rotation is a way of making the field feel exciting. So the field gets excited when you have a new crop that's planted. Well, what happens is, if you plant the kitnios in the same fields where the wheat is planted, eventually wheat will get mixed into your kitnios, and that could be a real issue of chametz. Because you'll have some wheat grains mixed in. So the Rishonim are giving many different reasons. We gave 3 reasons why kitnios is usher. By the way, and these are Rishonim in Germany. Right? Rishonim in France are not into kitnios. But in Germany, they're into kitnios. They say it's usher. The meaning is it's usher. Why is it usher? Well, it's cooked in a pot like cereals. It's usher because you can make it into bread. It's usher because there are some wheat grains that potentially get mixed in because of crop rotation. But fundamentally, if we read the Smak correctly, the Smak is saying that the reason why kitnios is usher is because there's a minhag not to eat it. Now here's the real question. If I have a practice And there are 10, 15, 20 different reasons. One of the conservative scholars published an article trying to be make on the Isser Kitnios, and he says that there are 15 different reasons in Rishonim, and those reasons don't really apply, therefore Kitnios should be permitted today. I think this is a fundamental mistake in the way halacha works. Because if I have a minhag, and I'm not sure why, but everyone's doing it, Jews are not eating kitnios. You know what that means? That means that I have to try to work very hard. Again, our tradition is the tradition of Ashkenaz, and we have to work very hard to understand why there is such a minhag. So, let's say there are 15 different reasons. Does that mean that it's a stronger minhag or a weaker minhag?
Weaker.
Weaker? Maybe. I don't think so. I think it means it's stronger. Because what's really important is that there's a minhag that Jews didn't do it. That's what's really important. Jews did not eat kitnios. And that is the end of the conversation. Why? I'm not 100% sure, but I know Jews didn't eat these things, therefore I don't eat them on Pesach.
So I don't get why it's allowed, though, for Sephardic Jews.
So Sephardim never had the minhag.
They just never had rabbis that said it was...
They never had rabbis who said it was also the practice never spread in Sephardic communities. The minhag never existed in Sephardic lands. In Ashkenazic lands, there was a minhag. And we're not exactly sure why. But ultimately, it's usher because of a minhag. Yeah?
We might not know why, but do we know when? As in, like, is the smock and Hagel's Raven Hearts the first time we know about it?
Okay, so the historians always look for the earliest source. The earliest source in traditional halachic writings is the smock. Yisrael Toshma wrote an article years ago where he found some 9th century references to minhag of Ketnios also. Again, finding the earliest source is always a question, but the minhag is certainly widespread by the time of the smack. Yeah.
We keep mentioning that it's German Jews that are doing this. Obviously, the Sephardim may not know that there are all these different branches of Ashkenazim, but we know that Ashkenazim are many different branches, so why, if it's just the German branch, should we...
That's a good question, because we probably don't know which branch of Judaism we came from. If I would know for sure that I'm a Jew from Tsarfas, from the north of France, and in the north of France they didn't have the minhag of kitnios, and I know that that's my tradition, so Enochanami, just like a Sephardi Jew doesn't have a tradition, so Jews from Tsarfas don't have a tradition. But over time, there is cultural diffusion, and people moved around, and we don't know where we come from. Yeah, I know my family comes from Romania. Okay. Great. So my grandfather was born in Romania. How many generations back were we in Romania? I don't know. I don't know where my family was. We know that Jews in Poland, they came to Poland from Germany at some point. We just don't know exactly where we come from. And somehow the practice of Ashkenaz really took over, in part because of the writing of halachic codes, in part because the Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen has the highest batting average of any major posek. Every single Truma in the Trumas Hadeshen makes it to Shulchan Aruch. Not a single one doesn't. The Trumas Hadeshen discusses maybe kitnis should be asur b'hanah on Pesach. He says it's not. But it's clear to Trumas Hadeshen kitnis is asur. The Ramah says it's asur. Once you have a halakhic code of the Ramah, that's saying that the minhag of Ashkenaz now carry weight. The minhag of Mitzarfas don't exist anymore. It's all the minhag of Ashkenaz. That's the only thing that we have that remains.
So just to clarify, are we saying that the real reason we keep the minhag, even if you cross, you're able to cross off all the reasons that are given, is because we don't know what the true reason is? And it's
the real reason we keep it is because it's a minhag. I'll stop the sentence halfway here. The reason we keep it is because Jews don't eat kidneys on Pesach. And Jews from Ashkenaz don't eat kidneys on Pesach. That's the end of the conversation. We have a mitzvah of Lima Torah, and we want to understand the reason for it, but ultimately the reason isn't what governs the halachic practice. So, for example, there are many fruit, potatoes. potatoes should meet the definitions of kidneys. You can make potato flour. Now, if you couldn't, you would have nothing to eat on potatoes. Everything is potato starch. How come potatoes aren't kidneys? Right, you can make a cake out of potatoes. The answer is that if the Pharisee scholar writes, I wonder if I see taking this all on this. Huh?
The
wives
said. They didn't have
any
other options. So the wives. Not
offering potato. That might be. Some actually say that because you need to live. The basic answer is potatoes weren't around at the time that the Minhag of Kidneys developed. Right? The Tiferes Star writes that Sir Francis Drake is one of the Hasidic Umos HaOlam because he brought the potato. That's very important. It's a huge contribution. Right? Potatoes are. So. New foods are not also based on kidneys. This is why all of, now, unless Klal Yisrael somehow accepted it, American corn, maize, is it kidneys?
Yeah.
We all treat it like kidneys. Can it be kidneys based on our Minhag approach? Well, corn wasn't around at the time that the Minhag developed. Nonetheless, for some reason, Jews stopped eating corn on Pesach. And therefore, the minhag now is we don't eat corn on Pesach. But when we have new foods, I spoke to Rav Schachter about this a few years ago, the whole question of kinwa. So, Rav Schachter basically said that he feels that there's a chiyuv to eat kinwa on Pesach to make sure that it doesn't become like corn. You want to show people that it's a new, that it should not become usher, because if you're not going to eat it, it might actually become usher. We don't want that to happen. When we spread the isher of kidneys, the minhag of kidneys more, quinoa can't be usher. Now again, the kashrus agencies say if you eat quinoa and Pesach, you have to, in Peru, there is places where quinoa grows right near wheat. So you have to make sure that the quinoa is checked carefully, that there's no wheat. You have to get quinoa with hashgacha. Okay, fine. But eat quinoa on Pesach, because if it's based on minhag, that's why Rav Moshe Feinstein felt that peanuts are not included in the Isser Kidneos. The minhag in certain communities that peanuts were included in the Isser Kidneos, in other communities the minhag is that peanuts were not included. It's very important to try to keep the minhagim to the best of our ability. That, I think, is a fundamental lesson of the Yom Tov of Pesach in general. Very few Yom Tovim have minhagim that are as family connected. Minhagim, like you said at the Seder, you know exactly what your father does, what your grandfather did. You know exactly what a Seder in the family feels like. You know the minhagim. And the minhag of kidneys on Pesach is so important because we want to keep the practice. And the basic point I'm trying to make is when you have a practice that is widespread among Klal Yisrael, but we don't know the real reason why, and we have 5, 10, 15 approaches, if anything, that means that it's a stronger practice, and if anything, that's why it's more important to keep the minhag. But keeping the minhag means what the minhag was. New foods are not included in the Isser of Kidneys. That's basically my spiel. I think we have time for one question, or not. Yes?
So if we're not going to include new foods, why is it that we continue to treat corn the way that we do?
I think we got to it too late. Right? Everyone has asserted corn.
But for what reason?
Again, corn meets some of the definitions of kidneys. You can grind corn, you can make cornbread, etc. It does meet some of the definitions, but the argument that Rav Moshe has and most poskim have, I give you the sources in the packet of Rav Moshe, most poskim assume that the reasons themselves are not what governs. What really governs over here is the minhag. And if the minhag is what governs, so therefore corn should theoretically not be ulcer, but lamaisa, there's a minhag.
It's like, did Rav Moshe get to peanuts too late or something like that? Is that the deal?
So Rav Moshe got to peanuts at a time that there were minhagim in other communities asking peanuts already. The Malad of Lehoel was a rav in Germany. He already writes that peanuts are ulcer in Yerushalayim as early as the turn of the century. That's the turn of the last century. There were poskim were asking peanuts. There was a whole discussion about peanut oil. That's where the fight was. At that time, there's a ton that can be done with this sort of kidneys. It's really fascinating. There are Makoros, there are Shitos, rapeseed oil, which is called canola oil, was a huge fight. A huge fight whether you can use it on Pesach or not. There's a ton of literature on it. I want to wish everyone just a Chag Kasher Sameach, a wonderful Yom Tov. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.